Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than two decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Seeking Witchcraft. Today I have on special guest Tony Sosa to discuss working with siren spirits. Welcome, Tony, to the show.
What's going on, y'all? Thank you for having me on the show, Ashley.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming on. Could you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
I'm a friend of Ashley's. I'm also a Gardnerian High Priest located here in North Carolina. I also am involved in a couple of other traditions as well. Some of these things I'm going to be bringing in and kind of talking about as they're relevant, not just to the religion, but also the culture that I'm from as well, as I am, you know, Afro-Latino, I am Caribbean. So there's a lot of overlap between things like Santeria and just the general culture, especially Latin culture within that context. So
cool. Thank you so much for coming on. As you mentioned, you're one of my friends, so I'm super excited that we're recording this together. I feel like you are so knowledgeable just in all sorts of things in the occult and magical community, and I'm super excited to pick your brain, especially about this topic. And so this topic, we're going to be talking about siren spirits, mermaids, water spirits, whatever the proper phrasing is. We'll get to that. This was something that I was curious about because I saw that Tony had posted a little bit about the working with sirens. And I was on a phone call with him a couple days ago, a week ago. And I was saying, hey, like, can you tell me a little bit more about that? I haven't really heard too much about working with mermaids or siren spirits. I was like, is that like the same as a water elemental? Like, it, like what exactly is this? And so we talked for a little bit and I was like, let's do an episode on this. Cause I had a lot of questions. And so I know I must not be the only person. So what are siren spirits? Are they the same as water elementals? What is your experience with this work?
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, I do want to say that I'm probably most excited to do this episode because I think anybody who knows me, especially my family, my mom, knows that I've always loved mermaids, especially as a kid. They just hold like a really deep sentimental thing for me. And so then, of course, years later, you know, coming into the craft and a lot more into like spiritual practices, I learned that mermaids were actual entities. You know, they might not look like Ariel, but, you know, that they are a spiritual being. And, you know, that just, you know, I think I got lost in the wormhole from there. I think people often conflate mermaids and sirens. I mean, if you look at mythology, sirens, if I'm not mistaken, were winged creatures that did sing songs, and then mermaids were mermaids. And then I think over time, they just kind of blended these two things together. I do feel that somebody who is an initiate in a BTW tradition, there is some overlapping between my understanding, especially a cultural understanding of what una sirena, a mermaid, is, and something like maybe an undine. I think that's I have found that's probably the closest relative or maybe counterpart that I have found. But I mean, mermaids have existed across countless cultures. I mean, all throughout the centuries, it seems to be like a thematic thing with mankind, especially as we started traveling overseas. I've just found that particularly people in West Africa and across the Caribbean, I think that there's a lot more of a nuanced and complex structure around who she is and what she is. As far as I'm aware also, and if there's anybody in the audience too that does know of a continuously existing European mermaid cult, I would really love to hear about it. But as far as I know, West Africans and Caribbeans are the only ones that have maintained a really strong, prevalent, and consistent cult around the figure of La Sirena or La Sirene. The mermaid itself. So I'm going to be talking a lot about from what I know, which I think that would be a really helpful, especially to people, I think, coming at it from a more maybe European-based practice who are interested in working with water spirits. I mean, I know we work often with the powers of the elements and things like that. And without delving too much into what those are, at least to us, I just never really felt like there was a really in-depth understanding of what the element of water was until I really started working with the mermaids and those kinds of spirits. Because, I mean, at least in European-based practices, I think there's so many varieties of water spirits. Like, there's undines, and then you have things like maybe like the Rusalka in Slavic mythology, and then Finnfolk in Norway. And then you have naiads and all these other kinds of different classes of water spirits. But at least in the Caribbean, mermaids are the rulers of the waters, full stop. You know, you could be in a lake, you could be in a river, you could be in the ocean, but that's all mermaid territory. It really doesn't matter. And I feel like because of that, I don't know, her power and her influence is a lot more prevalent, especially coming from a culture where water rules everything around you. It's really easy to see why she was so important. So again, I really am going to be coming at this from what I know and from, you know, a cultural perspective. And of course, like all folklore and folk-based practices, things do vary culture to region to region even. Stories can change. But I think across the board, both within West Africa and also in the Caribbean, they're almost essentially very similar. They're often honored the same way. They're more or less viewed the same way. Collectively, and I think this is something that's really different from water spirits as seen in something like a BTW compared to in the Caribbean, is that I think water spirits in general are kind of approaches very healing and very nurturing, which they are. But the mermaids in the Caribbean and to West Africans, I think, are neutral at best. And they are a lot more terrifying, I think, than is often depicted in a lot of European folklore. I mean, over there, you'll see they're kind of doing the same thing, like sinking ships and what have you. But I mean, the mermaids in the Caribbean are abducting people and, you know, causing illness and misfortune even while you're on land. You don't have to be in the water to be terrorized by them, which I think it makes them a little more scary. Yeah.
Did you ever watch The Lighthouse with Robert Pattinson, William Dafoe?
I did see the Mermussy, if that's what
you're... Okay, yep, that's what I was going to mention, the Mermussin.
I did see the Mermussy, I did. They put a lot of thought into what that might have looked like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did not watch the movie, I just watched the clip just because I wanted to see the mermaid, and, you know, I didn't feel like watching that for 2 hours just for 3 seconds of a mermaid, so...
It was an interesting film, but I digress. So I was really happy that you had a chance to bring up the cultural side of this. I went to a mermaid museum actually over the summer last year, and it was really, really cool. They had all of these like historical references to mermaids over the years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was from the European viewpoint of mermaids just, you know, coming to either rescue sailors or kill them, drag them down to the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
And then as we've circled around the museum, in the last part of the museum, they actually had an entire section for people from the Caribbean, people from Africa who were talking about, it was really, really awesome. They had a whole altar set up as well too, for the mermaids. Yeah. And they have this phone that you could pick up and dial different numbers on it. And you would hear different folklore of different regions of how they viewed mermaids. But one of the really cool things I saw in this museum was that they had this sign up with all these like personal anecdotes of people being saved by mermaids from the Caribbean. And they were talking about it like this was a very, very real thing. No,
conviction, baby, with conviction. I'm sorry, but like that's the thing too. Like in the Caribbean, like you have stories that still exist to this day, and people will fist fight you if you tell them that mermaid did not save them.
Yep.
Like, I mean, there is like they are really convicted when they speak about these creatures. And again, to this day, and I think that's what's just so fascinating to me, because again, there still exists all these strange taboos and things like that around water, which I'll get into as well. But yeah, that is one of the hallmarks of, I think, the Caribbean and West African mermaid that makes her a little bit different from European mermaids. And it's the theme of abduction. And yeah, you could be out on a boat and be taken by mermaids that exist. But I mean, I'm talking like when you're on land, you know, I mean, to be lured by them, or to be taken and vanish for years and then only to return again with powers and things like that. There's still stories to this day, again, of people who know of people or have a family member who they will swear, put their hand on any religious text and say, my uncle vanished for 7 years at sea and came back. And, you know, we thought he drowned. You know, last we saw him, he was at a lake, or, you know, it could happen anywhere in a lake, in a river, and wherever there's a lot of water, that is their territory. And people in West Africa and the Caribbean are really cautious around areas like that. So I love that there's a whole like dedication to that, because I just think that's really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So there's fun. Go ahead.
I was going to say, next time you're in town, it's kind of far from here. It's a couple hours away, but we should go and check it out.
It's worth the drive to me. I would be in Wonderland, I think. Child and me would be very happy. So, I mean, talking about mermaids and abductions and things like that, we could talk about some of her symbolism, which, you know, obviously fish, you know, as a mermaid. However, in Lukumi, for example, Yemaya, her name closely translates to something like a mother of fish. She's regarded as the mother of all, as all life came from the sea. Her sister Oshun also rules fresh water. But something that's also not known is that the depictions of mermaids, again, at least in West Africa and the Caribbean, she's most often has a lower half of a snake. So serpents are also associated with mermaids as well. And it is easy to see, as snakes often are found in pretty much any body of water you can find a snake. But I think that alludes to their powers of transformation. Again, you know, they're incredibly powerful, but they're also really volatile. And that's just from personal experience. And again, people who do work with these spirits. So, you know, although they could bestow things like beauty and riches, they could also, again, they can inflict illness. They could send misfortune and death. And that is, I think, a mirror to the sea itself. You know what I'm saying? Although the ocean is beautiful, water is beautiful, it could be really dangerous at the end of the day. And I think that that is something that should be considered with working with these spirits. You also have something like the mirror. I think across cultures, mermaids are always seen with mirrors. For us, the mirror symbolizes the moon, but it's also a reflective surface. So water spirits, especially mermaids, are thought to be really vain, and they love to look at their own reflections. So that's why she's often seen holding a mirror. The mirror also represents portals too, as water is thought to be another dimension or another realm altogether. So to hold a mirror under the water is a way to summon the mermaids to you as well too, but also, you know, do so at your own caution.
I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that a bit.
Oh yeah, no, I'll definitely get into that. And one of the more interesting ones, which is going to lead to a little bit of interesting folklore, is the comb. So mermaids, again, pretty much across the board, are often seen combing their hair and things like that. But Caribbean folklore actually has a lot of stories extending, again, even into modern times, where a passerby on the beach, for example, would find a comb on the shore. Now, if you take that comb back to the water, the mermaids would take you. Also, it is said if you dream of a comb being given to you by mermaids, you're not supposed to take that comb back to them, which we could talk a little bit more about why that is as well a little bit later. But, you know, as scary as they sound, and I mean they are, I think that there is a certain reverence when it comes to them. Yes, they bestow beauty, influence, wealth. So that's something I think that you and I talked about a little bit on the phone one time, which is a really big deviation, I think, from like European understandings of a working money versus something in the Caribbean. So in BTWs, you know, earth element rules wealth, but here water rules wealth. And, you know, I think a lot of people who are familiar with more BTW practices would find that a little strange. But I know when we talked about a little, we gave examples of even in the English language, money has a lot of watery references, or refer to money as water. even in our own existing language. So things like liquidate your assets, cash flow, money runs through my hands, make it rain, currency, pouring money down the drain. The word clams was actually an old word for money, and clams are called sand dollars even now. We'll pool our money together. I'm drowning in debt, or I'm drowning in bills, revenue streams. I could just keep going. Like, so the idea of money being water is really not so strange when you think about how we talk about it as water. Now, there's a lot of other words for money too, like bread and other things that are obviously not water, but I think there's still an idea of money and water kind of being tied together. And I think it also has to do with, you know, water being a source of life. We need life. And I mean, we need water, I mean, and in this world, we need money, you know. The mermaids also bestow gifts of beauty. So, you know, most cultures regard, you know, not always, there are a few cultures that the mermaid is not particularly beautiful, but she usually is. So the ocean is a place full of beings. I remember I wrote here, each wave is thought to be a spirit. So that's what we're really looking at here. And those spirits are the mermaids. You know what I'm saying? Those are all of them occupying this body of water. So I think one of the key differences is that the mermaids are not spirits of water. They are the water, right? And so I think that approaching them that way really changed how I view magic, I think, on a fundamental level, where it's like I'm not seeing things any longer as spirits of earth, but rather the earth itself is the spirit. You know what I'm saying? It's just like I'm not calling something from it. The spirits are already present. And that's kind of how it is with the ocean or the sea or any given body of water. It's, you know, the mermaids are there, whether you call them or not. This is just a matter of getting their attention. They can also bestow things like influence. And I think this goes back to her voice and her beauty. For example, I think I wrote a note here. La Sirene in Haiti is said to have the most beautiful voice of all the Lua. They call her the queen of the choir. So she's said to have the most beautiful, the most alluring voice. And they talk about her Haiti. There exists a really prominent mermaid cult. And within that, you could actually marry one of the mermaids and you enter into a spiritual contract with her. Terms and conditions are stipulated on both parties. And if both agree, then the marriage contract is drawn and you're now wed to the spirit. And she gives you essentially all of the riches and all of the powers essentially that comes from her, which is, again, beauty, wealth, health, influence, and it psychic abilities, because the La Sirene is also a witch. She's a powerful sorceress as well. She rules over magic, because the sea itself is, and think of the moon as well, is illusion and all these other kinds of things. So those who are blessed by the mermaids are said to possess really profound powers of divination, or able to work really good love magic, glamour, bindings, all these other kinds of things. It's just everything that comes from the sea, everything that is associated with that.
Well, I was going to say, hearing you talk about mermaids being of the sea and being witches, I'm over here thinking of, I wonder what it would be an interesting conversation to like bring Kate into this.
Well, we do have the Inalia, mm-hmm. of the sea and her ocean aspect. And actually going further into that, because I was going to talk a little bit about her imagery next. I know La Diosa del Mar, the goddess of the sea, is a common motif used to represent her. So is La Virgen Inmaculada, Mary the Immaculate, which is Mary at the point of conception. So water, I should say, is considered a feminine element. So because of that, mermaids are associated with things like fertility. So Mary Magdalene, funny enough, has long ties to mermaids. Upon doing some research, I found out that in Tudor England, a mermaid was a euphemism for a prostitute. So I think that's interesting. Mary Magdalene, the prostitute, and a mermaid, gets connected there. And also in Catholicism, something called Magdalene cakes are made and prepared for her during her saint days. And they're made of cockle bread and shaped into a seashell. There's also a lot of images of even Mary, the mother of Christ, in a seashell all across the board. So I really feel like there's a still existing connection between those Marys and mermaids. Another thing that I came across in my research for my Disney fans out there, in the song Part of Your World, and this is really like a strange thing. And this is, I think, one of those examples of, I think, spirits manifesting themselves through the subconscious. Rather, we're aware of what they're doing or not. I feel like they try to continue to exist. So I found out that in Part of Your World, in The Little Mermaid, Ariel, who has red hair, which, by the way, Mary Magdalene was said to have red hair. actually swims to a painting of Mary Magdalene. So when she sings, what is fire and what is it? What's the word? Burn. When she says that, she touches a portrait from 1640 by French Baroque painter. I think Georges de la Tour, known as Magdalene with the Smoking Flame. When the film's directors asked why he made that choice, the animator, Glenn Keane, was actually a devout Catholic. He said that all he wanted was a picture of fire underwater. But I still can't help but think, again, this is the spirits manifesting themselves through our subconscious minds, which the subconscious is also the domain of mermaids. So it's a strange detail and a coincidence that also is weirdly enough in a film about a mermaid. So, like, I don't know. I think all of those things are just, I think, so cool to me.
I never would have expected to hear about Mary Magdalene and mermaids, but that is really interesting. And it makes me wonder about, like, the original Little Mermaid book, like the one where, yeah, just like she's stepping, whenever she steps, it feels like she's like walking on knives. And then I think mm-hmm. she dies at the end. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if there's any connections with Mary Magdalene in that version of the Little Mermaid.
I mean, I feel like there's like this weird thing with her and mermaids. I mean, there's an instance where in the Gospels, Mary Magdalene invites Jesus to drink from her well, which is a euphemism to have sex. But again, that imagery of Mary Magdalene with a well, water, like there's still this thing there. And I feel like these were the pagans with already known existing lore of mermaids and things like that, that just kind of found ways to incorporate their imagery into the religion that was starting to take over, which was Christianity. So do you have any questions for me at this point? I've been kind of rambling on about mermaids for a little bit.
No, this is all so incredibly interesting. And I feel like we can go in such a rabbit hole of mermaids, which it sounds like we're kind of already getting there, but I know the hole can go much, the well can go much deeper. So Tony, we just spent so much time talking about just the history and the background and symbolism and all these really amazingly interesting facts about mermaids. And I'm sure all the listeners are dying to know, okay, well, how do I start working with these spirits? So I guess I should, before I even get into that, I should ask, so how did you first encounter this energy?
Oh, man. Okay. So we're going to go down. Oh my God, this is taking me in so many different directions.
I know it can always be a loaded question to ask. How do people get involved with spirits?
It really is a loaded question because like this is like going like to like the beginning of my life. But you know, aside from like the early childhood things and all of that, as I started to get older and especially once I got initiated a lot deeper into the craft and things like that, one reoccurring theme in my life, both pre-craft and post-craft, at least in my dreams, is water, is something that I dream about really often. And funny enough that I love these spirits so much, I'm actually terrified of, deep water and oceans and things like that. Like I have a lot of nightmares of being surrounded in open water or stuck in open water or things like that.
And maybe you know better based on your knowledge of mermaids.
I think it's a subconscious generational thing. They're like, please be cautious, my son. But over the years, I started to then dream of them. And these were really hyper realistic dreams. I mean, I'm a really vivid dreamer, but I mean, these were like, you know, I couldn't tell it apart from a regular day type of thing. And it's creepy because throughout the years, they got closer and closer and closer, which I'm going to get into their predatory nature a little bit because I think that really ties into it. But I will say that at least when I see them and how they have appeared to me, it started out with being far enough away, like standing on like the side of the lake, and I can see them in the water and they're beautiful, but it's like uncanny valley. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
oh gosh, I'm having an image of that. And I'm like, oh, no, okay. Yeah, it is
beautiful. But like, and as I get closer, because they're calling me closer and I get closer to the water, you're looking at them. And it's like, they're so pretty that it's inhuman. It seems more like something pretending to be human. And I feel like it's giving me chills right now. Like they're genuinely unnerving. And I remember looking at them in the water and I can think in my dreams, like the way I can think in real life. And I'm like, no. Everything in my mind is like, do not go, like, stay away from them. And, you know, and they're kind of like, come on, like, you know, and just getting a little closer. And it's, you know, so I've had a repeating dreams like that, almost in essentially in the same nature, but I'm always closer and closer. So like some, eventually I found myself, now I'm in the water, but like maybe in my ankles, you know what I'm saying? And so it's like over the years, I feel like they just get me closer, until I had a pretty profound experience doing a meditation with one of the high priestesses, which was a completely serendipitous thing. And it wound up leading me to essentially making a pact with a mermaid. So two nights before that gathering that I went to sometime last year, the first night I had a somewhat of an out of body experience, what we would call something like sleep paralysis. But instead I saw like women who were like pale white, but not like, again, not like a person. It was like ghostly. And they were wrapped in like swathes of like, looked like some kind of, I don't know, fabric or something that moved like water. And there was three of them, and they were just swimming like over the top of my head. And I was like, what the fuck? Woke up from that. Then the following night, before I went to the gathering, I had this dream that it was nighttime. It was a full moon. And again, just really hyper-realistic. So this is genuinely terrifying experience. It's not fun. So I had this dream. It's a full moon night, and I'm on the beach, and I go into the water, and I stop at about my knees, and I think to myself, wait a minute, I shouldn't be out here. And so when I turn around to try to leave, my foot is stuck in the sand. And so at that point, I start to panic because waves are starting to crash against me and smash against me from the direction that are going to absolutely knock me off of my balance. And I look down at myself, and I'm wearing a lot of gold and jewelry. And I remember thinking in the dream, I said, oh my God, they think I'm the gift. They being the mermaids. And so I panic. And I remember I cried out, and then I said, yeah, Maya, please save me. And a woman, I don't know, it's like the dream cut, but this woman just dived off of like the cliffside. She was wearing a white, again, like a white sheet or I don't know, fabric of some kind that she just pulled off of herself, like skin. And she dove naked into the water. And I remember she pulled me out and she threw me out onto the shore. And I remember I looked up to the sea and I said, thank you, you have saved me. And I woke up absolutely fucking terrified because it was a really scary experience. And then I wound up going to that gathering where I had this incident where I dreamt of a handful of pearls. And then I show up to a ritual that night and I was given a pearl. And then my now partner gifted me with a pearl bracelet the day after that. So it was like a series of things where, you know, they're giving you things in the material. And like, that was just the most bizarre experience for me. So I would really say that's where, at that point, I really plunged very deeply into working with them, because I also felt like after that dream, they're not going to get any closer. It's we're going to take you. And I don't know what that would look like. You know what I'm saying? Because again, at least in my culture and things like that, and also in West Africa, there's the abduction element of mermaids. And, you know, I think a lot of times we can think of these abductions as like these beings coming to snatch you up out of the water. But again, when you remember that they are the water itself, being taken by the mermaids could look a lot less like, you know, Ariel and her sisters coming to get you, and a lot more like getting pulled out by a riptide. You know what I'm saying? And you're lost at sea and never seen again. So it's things like that that could very likely happen to you. You know what I'm saying? It's also not uncommon, especially when calling these creatures, which is why it's a big thing of when you're doing rituals and ceremonies to them, you do not submerge yourself in water or get near enough a place where you could possibly go off into the water. I mean, I've seen videos, a friend of mine who's an initiate sent me, and you can even see them on YouTube, people getting initiated into these mermaid cults in Haiti, and, you know, people just being held down because they book it for the water. They just book it towards the ocean, and they'll swim far, far, far out, and you just lose them. They're just lost into the trance. They're lost to the call. It's, again, I said, it's not uncommon to be working these things to feel an insatiable, overwhelming compulsion to jump. That is their nature. They want you to jump. They want you to come to them. Again, and this is not even to sound woo-woo. I mean, this is from talking to people who work these things for real, and also from personal experiences with these spirits. They're very beautiful. They give you a lot of gifts. My mermaid is very good to me, but I also know don't fuck with her either, you know, and not with these spirits at all. You know, I think that they can make very powerful incredible allies, but also really deadly enemies that you don't want, you know? So.
Well, for your sake, I hope that if you do ever have a dream where you are fully brought into the water, that hopefully it'd be a transformative experience in a not deadly way.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, me, myself, like I said, going back to, just my relationship with water itself. Personally, if I was a mermaid, I'd be a freshwater mermaid. I like rivers. I like things like that. It's the ocean that I mean, even to this day, I do not go past my waist. And my waist is pushing it. I'll usually even just stand at my knees, maybe my ankles if I want to dip a lid in a little bit. But it's just the sea itself is not something that I want to fuck around with. You know what I'm saying?
It can be pretty scary. I mean, I love water. I'm with you. I like you know, rivers and ponds and things like that. I mean, I'm a big pool person personally. I like the ocean, but yeah, I don't like walking far enough out where I can't touch the bottom anymore.
No. And I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I'm born and raised in Miami my entire life, and I've been to the beach more times than I can count. And when I was younger, I mean, even into adult age, when you're out in the beach, you one step and you could be several feet deeper. Like, you'd be surprised how quickly the ground drops and the water gets really cold and really dark. You know what I'm saying? And anything could be there, anything. And that kind of really is an illustration of how my ancestors, at least, are understanding what these things are, because you got to think of what the ocean is. Yes, it's beautiful. Yes, it has many treasures. Yes, it's very beneficial to us, but it's also really dangerous, and it deserves all the respect that should be given to it. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So I will talk a little bit about some folklore, since I did give a lot of more factual information, and I did illustrate, I hope, the predatory nature of these beings. So we're often told, at least growing up, you know, to steer clear of going too far out into the water. At least I can tell you, I'm not Jamaican, but I'm friends with many Jamaicans. And again, you want to talk about other mermaid obsessed culture. Jamaicans are also really high up there, again, all the West Indies, Caribbean. But in Jamaica, for example, there's a place called Flatbridge, which even now is thought to be plagued by what they call Watamamis. And these are really hostile in their depictions. Like, you have to make appeasements and offerings to the Watamamis, things like that. And again, it's currently existing. People go missing at Flatbridge, strangely, if they're, you know, all these kinds of things still happen around Flatbridge that are attributed to mermaids. And again, like I said earlier, in many families, you'll hear so many stories about them, aunts, uncles, cousins. And again, they will swear to you that these things are real. The most terrifying thing about them is you don't always have to be in the water. And I think it said that a little bit earlier. At least not at first. So they can lure you through dreams by giving you items to return to them. So I talked about the comb. So it's a common superstition that if a mermaid gives you a comb or you find one on the beach, you must bring her the opposite of what she asks for. The reason for that is because they believe that the mermaid is testing your competence. If you bring her the wrong item, she'll become upset and she'll leave you alone, because what she actually wants is a slave. So within that folklore, mermaids abduct people to take them for themselves as either spouses or slaves. It's believed that once you're taken, they will bring you to their realm, and you will serve them for the rest of your life. But sometimes they do come back, and those are the more spooky, I think, tales for me. You know, again, West Africa and the Caribbean is filled with stories of people, again, knowing someone who vanished. Oftentimes the number is 7. So sometimes they will vanish for 7 years, only to return later. And the person will sometimes be unable to speak. They'll be wearing all white, and they'll have a really immense powers of divination and magic that just transcend any kind of understanding. You'll also hear the idea of never approaching the ocean head on, as this is seen as you challenging the sea. And for me, that's not a game I'm willing to gamble on. So me, myself, if I ever do go to the ocean, I always enter backwards. This is something that you'll see also done working in cemeteries. It's thought you're not supposed to enter a cemetery head on because you're challenging the spirits. So you walk backwards. It's kind of like when, you know, the police make you lift your hands to make sure you're unarmed. When you enter the water, you want to be sure to remove any and all jewelry. So kind of like that dream I told you about, things like gold and silver attracts them. So, you know, legend says if one swims in their waters with jewelry on, they will take you because they think you're the gift, or that you're being offered up to them.
So if somebody wanted to start working with these spirits, would you recommend that they do wear that jewelry in the water or no?
No.
Okay.
That's a hard no. you're going to wear jewelry. If you're doing it in your house, decorate yourself with jewelry and things like that. I'll talk about that when working with them. But never go into a body of water working with them wearing jewelry unless you're trying to die. I mean, I don't know. If those are your wishes, then do as you please. So existing, you know, mermaid cults still hold the taboo that an initiate or one wed to a mermaid is never again to enter spaces of water. So, you know, like I talked about in Haiti, if you marry La Sirena or La Sirene, you have the taboo of never entering water again. Obviously, showers and things like that don't count. You know, we're talking going into the water at the beach or a river or anything. You're just not supposed to touch it because it's thought that the mermaids will, again, they'll take you for themselves because they want you. Now, I did talk about how people disappear, and this is something that I did kind of want to make a quick side note on before I talk about how to do things like offerings and maybe starting to work with them a little bit for yourself. But the appearance of the mermaid. So the topic of their appearance is one of a lot of controversy within the culture. Unfortunately, due to European colonialism, things like colorism and featureism became factors. So many times you'll see in West Africa and the Caribbean that the mermaid is depicted as white or very fair-skinned with straight hair. Now, knowing the history of colonialism across the West Indies and Africa, it's easy to see how those particular features got attributed to beings that were the pinnacle of beauty, right? Tragically, mermaids started to reflect a race of people that looked nothing like the legends the people came from, which I think is really sad. So some stories of abduction actually include that upon their return, the person has now straight hair and finer features after they come back from the land of the mermaid, which you could already see the implications of things like that, and it gets really icky. However, I will note that it's not all depictions of mermaids within the culture. You still see black mermaids very much within the culture. It's just the white mermaid is the most prominent. But I did learn that the reason for that actually was because what they were trying to depict was the mermaids as clear, because mermaids are water itself. So you can't paint clear. So they're not trying to convey so much all the time that they're white, but more that they're clear, which to me made a lot of sense. And it brought kind of a different understanding when it comes to their imagery. So I just did want to kind of briefly touch on that when it comes to talking about mermaids in the Caribbean, because I feel like I could not mention that.
Yeah, I appreciate you mentioning it. I've never actually heard of that concept of mermaids being clear, but that does make a lot of sense given the discussions that we had earlier. I know when the new Ariel came out, everybody was freaking out that the actress was not a white woman. And I remember seeing her and seeing the movie and thinking to myself, I mean, if I were a half woman, half fish living in the ocean, I feel like you would not be pale as snow, possibly, because if you're like in the sunlight.
Right. That's one way to look at it. I mean, to me, it was just bizarre because I just kind of thought, I mean, do y'all think white people are the only ones with mermaids or you know what I'm saying? It's like mermaids exist everywhere. And again, as we're talking about here, West Africa and the Caribbean has a really strong devotion still to the figure of the mermaid. So, you know, I thought that was honestly all just really petty and ridiculous, but
yeah.
Them being clear makes a lot of sense, which is why they say you can't see them in the water because they are the water. You know what I'm saying?
That's really cool. I really like that concept.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked it too. It made a lot of sense to me. And that's why they say, you know, they're depicted as beautiful women, but the reality of it is they don't look like anything. They could look like anything is the thing. Because they're water. Water could take any shape. If you want to see something really beautiful, oh, look, here I am. And I think that goes back to like the dreams I've had where I've seen them, where it's like, yeah, you're really beautiful, but this is not like you're not human. You know, you look like something pretending to be human and it just makes it creepier.
There's also like the concept of just water in general, like can cause trance states. I mean, like you go sit out in the woods and you sit next to, you know, a running stream, a babbling brook, you know, right. A little waterfall, like right. You kind of, it just causes you to relax.
Right.
Like this is used in like spas, the sound of mm-hmm. running water. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's just an interesting concept to think about.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, because now we're talking like there's like a psychological component to this too, right? It's the sound of water in itself, just not even spiritually, just fundamentally as a human, it relaxes you. And I think, again, listen to that sound, right? Even our eyes, we like shiny things. Why? Because throughout our evolution, we were trying to spot water. So when you saw something glittering, it meant water was around, right? So all these things, I feel like we're just wired to be drawn to the water. And I think that's what makes the mermaid so alluring, but also so dangerous. You know what I'm saying? It's like we are made up of water. They are beings of water. So that's why they say the call of the mermaid is truly irresistible, because it is calling to on the fibers of your being. You know, it's calling to the water in your body. You know, that's calling you to rejoin that water, which is... You know, and I think that kind of just goes back to Yemaya being known as the mother of all, which I think is a really profound sentiment coming from the ancient Yoruba people, considering that we know now that all life did come from the sea. So the fact that they held that belief as the mother of the ocean is the mother of all living, because they believe all life came from the sea once upon a time, I think that's a really beautiful sentiment.
All right, so we've talked so much about the background of mermaids, so, and your personal experiences. For people who are listening who want to get involved working with mermaids, are there rituals they could do? We talked a little bit about making sure they don't go in with jewelry, but they can adorn themselves there at home. Don't go into the water with jewelry, I mean. But yeah, what are some things that people can do from home if they want to take on this relationship with these very seductive but also dangerous spirits?
Yeah, definitely. So, again, I, from speaking with different people and just kind of my own independent research and again, personal experience as well, it's kind of across the board. It's kind of universal across the board a little bit. There's some varying differentiations here, but if you want to construct something like an altar space, you're typically going to want to do, everything dressed in blue and white, right? Think of the ocean. Mermaids, like I've said before, are vain creatures and they enjoy really fine and beautiful things. So whatever altar you create doesn't have to necessarily be expensive, but it should be appealing to the eye. This is going to help you attract them. It's going to help you attract them to you, essentially. If you surround yourself with pretty shiny things, things that smell good, those are all things that they like. You know what I'm saying? Because they are creatures that enjoy really, I guess, just finer, luxurious kinds of things. So again, it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't be $40 bottle of wine, but have wine, have something for them that, you know, I don't know. They're kind of bougie, bro. Like that's the best way that I can put it.
I can relate.
So make sure your space is, I think you do a great job with them. Just saying, make sure your space is neat and clean. Every sensory spirit experience for them to indulge in there. Spare no detail. Again, they're very dangerous, but also very generous. So they'll also be as generous to you as you are to them. So if you're being cheap with them, you know, and you're going to get cheap back, bro. That's just if you get anything at all. Like, you know, that's just kind of what it is. So I went ahead and I compiled like kind of like a little list here. And I also have this typed out and I spoke with Ashley. So we will possibly, I think you said it's okay to provide. Okay, yeah, we will be providing... this information written down, including everything that you know you need to at least start your relationship.
It will be in the episode description for this episode.
Awesome. So for starters, like I said, you're going to want to dress her altar in blue and white. You are going to have her image of some kind there. So again, you could use Mary Magdalene. You could use La Virgen Inmaculada, La Reina del Mal. You can use, you know, images like that to represent her. White flowers, white and blue candles, a mirror as a prominent symbol of hers, a brush, fruits, especially those that carry a lot of water. So things like apples, grapes, watermelons, pineapples, things like that. Jewelry, gold, silver, especially pearls. Pearls also represent wealth to them. So definitely have pearls. I wear my pearls. Everyone knows I love me my pearls. White wine, champagne, coins. Silver or gold coins, but also regular dollar bills too. You can give her a cigar, sweets, things like cakes, macaroons, seashells, colonia, cologne and perfume, water. If preferably a large bowl of water, if you have the space for it. I don't have the space for it. I'm a short few glasses, but typically you would do seven glasses for the seven seas. Or if you're lacking in space, just make sure you have a vessel of water in general. Singing. This is something that's always done for her rituals and rites. Music is always present. Kind of going back to you were saying, the sound of a running brook could be used to induce meditative states. Sound is really important and prominent to the spirits of water. And, you know, the mermaid, even culturally at this point, is inseparable from song. And going back to La Sirène, known as the queen of the choir, the one with the most beautiful voice, you know what I'm saying? So you don't need to have the best voice. They just enjoy the act of singing itself, the melody. Something that I have noticed that they're very, very responsive to. Again, anything that draws really heavy emotion, because they're a water element. So everything that you work with them, you want to, is has to come from the inside. You know what I'm saying? It has to make you feel. If you don't want to sing, it's perfectly acceptable to play songs to them that, you know, maybe you want to do love work with them. Play her sappy love songs that make you, and sing along with them to her. You want to make them feel also what you're feeling, because again, as water spirits, they're also very sentimental. So the language they understand is not logic, it's emotion. You know, she understands what you feel. That's why mermaids grant wishes. Wishes are desires. That's all water. And another big thing with them, and just in general, is to be clean. Water is cleanliness, right? So make sure when you're working them in your own space, or even when you go out to work with them, make sure you are, you know, perfumed, groomed, bathed when approaching them to gain their favor. They don't like things that are dirty. And again, you know, especially their altar spaces, keep it clean, all of that. So I said earlier, you know, I can, all of these things are from my own cultural context. So with that being said, I would strongly suggest you never give fish as an offering. For us, well, you know, if you want to give meat, make sure it's a creature that walks on land. For us, you know, to our understanding, you never offer the sea back up for children. So that's how we're looking at it. I know it would make sense, and I get it, because when I was talking with my high priestess, you know, she was like, oh, we could give her fish. And I was like, oh my God, don't do that. But I mean, it made sense, because it's like, well, she's, you know, so I see the connection in that. But, and I mean, if you feel comfortable doing something like that, you know, that's up to you. I can only speak from my own understanding of it all. And to me, it makes sense. You just don't offer up the sea back up her dead children, bro.
I love that comparison, because when you were talking about, like, you know, food offerings, I was thinking, oh yeah, like fish or maybe seaweed or something. And then as soon as you said you don't give her back your children, her children, I'm like, oh yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, like it makes sense.
It's like a lot of sense.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. So, and like I said earlier, remember, these are spirits of the water. They're not spirits of the water. They are the water, you know? So again, if you are working in spaces like beaches or anything like that, please don't be too far out. If you do feel you need to at least touch water, try to keep it on the shore, babe. Like I don't know. If you're on something like a dock or a pier, make sure you're sitting and with enough space between you and the water, or that you're not sitting to where your legs or any part of your body can dangle. If in a location like this, make sure you don't go alone. I remember when I think I took two of your initiates out one time, you know, I did that on purpose. I took that out on, I'm not going to go into really any more detail than that, but I will say I did go in a group because, like I said before, it's not uncommon to feel the insatiable and overwhelming urge to jump, which we experience. And that's why I was like, okay, everybody sit the fuck down.
Oh yeah, I heard some stories of my initiates with that whole group you guys had going on.
Yeah. We know that one. So again,
sorry, that one's not for Seeking Witchcraft, but it lives in my brain.
All any needs, they could hear it. but that urge to jump, man, is really a very real thing, and it could become so overwhelming sometimes. Just the energy, you could just simply lose your balance and fall in. Yeah. And again, if you go out by yourself, you fall out into an open body of water, and nobody come and help you, bro.
You're just shit out of luck.
Yeah, you're just, yeah, R.I.P.
You know what's funny is that the other way to say shit out of luck is a fish out of water.
That's so funny. You really are indeed a fish out of water at that point.
Some people also say that if you don't feel like you fit in, but I think you use it either way. But anyway, coming full circle.
But yeah, so I mean, there's so much more that I could go into. If this would be like 4 hours long, I think, if I tried to do that. But I do hope that at least from this, you know, everyone has gotten a little bit of a better understanding on what these creatures are. I know I gave an example of offerings to them. If you'd like to work with them, you know, you could do essentially, like I said, is lay out these offerings, sing songs to them, write petitions to them. Do everything in multiples of seven. So if you're working a spell for them 7 days or 7 nights, or if you want to do it more, but just it's always has to be in multiples of seven and things like that. But I mean, for the most part, again, they're rulers of the heart. So I think with all of these basic offerings and these kinds of gestures that you can offer to them, I think from there you can build a relationship possibly with one of these spirits. One thing that I will say with them, though, is even though there is a successful relationship, and I think this kind of just goes for any spirit, just because they want something doesn't mean you have to give it to them, right? So
just because they want you to jump off a pier doesn't mean you should jump off
a pier. Yeah, it doesn't mean you should jump off a pier. You know what I'm saying? It's not gonna go well for you. But even really in anything, if you want to give essence, because that is something that they will ask for, particularly if you're a man. If that's something that you give to them or she asks from you, you use your discretion on if you want to do that or not. And if you do, how often, like I said, if she, just because they want something, doesn't mean you have to give it to them all the time. But again, treat them very delicately. I know I'm probably making them seem really scary. I mean, they are, but they're also really, really, really beautiful spirits at the same time. I mean, I can't talk enough about them. I mean, they've really, really helped me and manifested in ways that, I mean, I've got almost 10 years in the craft now, and just working these spirits has put me in moments where even I have been like, yo, this shit is real. I'm like, yo, this is actually real. Like, I'm not playing pretend. There's something spooky happening here. So,
yeah, I mean, moral of the story is if you're working with spirits, be careful.
I think it's be mindful, be careful, and be educated in what you're working with. You know what I'm saying? Because witchcraft can be dangerous and it can be scary. And when you are not working something in a correct way, or you're doing something in a way that is disrespectful to a spirit, they can cause a lot of issues in your life.
I'm so glad that you actually brought that up, because for the listeners listening, Tony and I actually spoke about doing an episode on the topic of like armchair witches. So this kind of ties in what you're saying right now of like what we'll talk about later.
I can't wait to talk about that topic. You know, I know this is usually the portion where I'd probably give like a lot of books and references, but I mean, I can't really refer any books. The best that I could tell you is honestly talk to people. Because the fact of the matter is that especially in the Caribbean, lore is oral. You know what I'm saying? So you could find articles, you could find things, but you'll essentially run into a lot of the same basic information about them. Talk to people from the islands, ask them questions. You know what I'm saying? Talk to people who work with La Sirena or are initiated into her cult, or, you know, and they can really tell you a lot more about how to really work with these spirits and give you a lot more insight into their nature than really anything that you could read in any book. And it's kind of the same thing with really any ATR. You could read books about them, but so much of the lore, so much of the practice and procedure is all oral. You won't find it, you know? So that's probably the best bit of advice that I could give to you if you're really trying to learn more about them from that kind of context. But for the most part, again, the mermaid is pretty universal. She is associated with beauty and fertility, but she also can raise quite a storm in your life, which I actually made a note here of some of her magic as well, which I'll close on. You know, like I've mentioned before, La Sirena is said to possess otherworldly divination. She grants gifts of premonition and other psychic gifts. She gives everything you'd attribute to water: psychic ability, fertility, love, dreams. These spirits also bring with them good fortune, health, and charm. As well as protecting from illness, they can also create it. So remember, blood and water rule the body. So that means they can manifest and send terrible disease and plague to those who offend them. They can conjure storms. And so likewise, they can be used to raise a storm in someone's life, or they could raise a storm in your life. you know, as rulers of the wealth, they can drown their victims in financial trouble, leaving them destitute. And finally, as, you know, owners and rulers of the heart, they can drag you into really deep emotional depths of distress that could end with self-harm, severe depression, so on and so forth. So, you know, beautiful but deadly, just like me.
That is a perfect way to describe both yourself and the mermaids.
Well, you know, I do what I can.
Oh, well, Tony, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this. I know we could have continued talking for so long about this.
I really could.
Before we completely close up, I do have a question for you. I ask everybody at the end of my episodes. Well, and it's, if you could give one piece of advice to a beginner, doesn't have to be related to anything we talked about today, but it can be if you'd like it to, what would that piece of advice be?
A piece of advice for a beginner in the craft? I would say, you know, as cliche as it's probably going to sound, I would say know thyself is the best piece of advice that I could give you. Because I think that if you do not know who you are on a foundational level, you're going to find it difficult to align with other spirits and other energies when you yourself don't have a firm basis and understanding of you. And because of that, you will not have the power to overwhelm any other spirit if you yourself are unsure of your own power, of your own standing. You know, I remember back when I was pagan, I really loved the god Odin. Like, I just thought he was super cool. And I went out of my way to try to connect with that god. He didn't want anything to do with me. Still haven't heard from him. It's been a while. But I think that came from not really understanding myself because, I almost said a phrase. Let me try to reword this. If you don't know yourself, it's going to be hard to identify spirits that will align with you is the best way that I could put it. Because at the end of the day, the gods, these energies, these spirits are going to align with people like themselves. And it's the same way with people, even in life. You know what I'm saying? You're going to be surrounded by, and people surround themselves with, people who are like themselves. So that's my piece of advice. I think to thine own self be true and know thyself. And knowing thyself is also an ever evolving process. You're always going to uncover new parts of yourself. But if you don't have that foundation, at least I think your every effort will be doomed to failure.
Actual poetry.
Well, I hope that's helpful advice.
Oh, no, that's fantastic. And I could not agree more. Well, Tony, thank you so much for coming on. How can the listeners find you if they want to get in touch with you, if you would like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can, my Instagram handle. You can find me on Instagram if you'd like, at Gard Poppy. That's G-A-R-D Poppy. That's right. It's your boy. Everyone's favorite little brujito. And, yeah, as far as I know right now, that's where you can find me on socials. And if you have any questions for me, you can also shoot me an email, adevilreads@gmail.com, and I can answer any questions you got.
Great. And I will have all of that in the description. It's also worth noting that you are an author. So where can people find your books?
Oh, man, absolutely. So you can find my books on Amazon under Tony Sosa. Right now I have 3 books in my series out. You should definitely check those out if you have an interest in folklore, witchcraft. There's also a blend of a lot of Christian ideology as well for people who are traumatized by the religion like I was. So if all of those things interest you, definitely check my books out.
And I'm just giving you one more plug. Aren't you also a podcast host?
Oh, man, you just gassing me up today. Yep. You can also find me on my own podcast, Satyrs and Sinners, that I co-host with Justify. So definitely check us out on there. You can find us on everywhere podcasts are streamed. So, you know, iTunes, Spotify, so on.
Perfect. I will have all of that in the description. And if anybody wants to find me, you can find me on Facebook at Seeking Witchcraft Podcast. I am on Instagram at Seeking Witchcraft, or if you want to see my personal life, if that interests you, I'm at Spells and Kettlebells. I'm also on Patreon. So if you're interested in supporting the show, you can do so at patreon.com/seekingwitchcraft. And we do have a book club that is starting. By the time this episode comes out, we probably would have started. But it is open to anybody who wants to come at any point of time. And yeah, you should come check it out. Anyway, thank you again, Tony, so much for coming on. And yeah, stay tuned because I think we have a couple other ideas in the bucket that we want to discuss.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Ashley. Thank you so much. Everybody, swim safe.
Swim safe. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.